All right, well, welcome to this episode of the Renewed Leaders podcast, where we help you lead from the inside out. I'm super excited about this episode because I get to spend some time with a longtime friend and someone I just respect highly, and you will too as soon as you get into listening here. So Hillary Lapo, so excited to hang out with you today. For those that don't know Hillary, we were on staff together for over 12 years. Before that, she was an intern with us. And before that, she was a junior high student in our youth ministry. So long time together, great member of our family, and so excited for you guys to hear from her today. She, as I said, she was in kind of a number two role with us for over 12 years, and so has lots of great insights of having to work with me, which is a big deal. And also, she's worked for some other leaders in the number two role. And so today, I have asked her to come on and share some of her thoughts, some tips of what it's like to lead in the number two chair, because it's different. And there's some unique things about that. So Hillary, thanks for jumping on. I want you to say hello to everybody real quick.
Yeah, it's my pleasure and honor to be here. When Ryan asked me, he was like, I know it's not necessarily your thing. And I'm like, no, I would be honored to. You know, I won't divulge any big stories of what it was like to work with you too much. But
yeah.
I'm just happy to be here.
Yeah, so good. Well, okay, so like I mentioned, you've worked with a few different leaders, very different types of leaders as well, in terms of just kind of personality, the way that they lead. And so I would love for you just to share, what is it like to be in that number two chair? What's that like? And maybe some tips for those that are in that role. How can they lead in that number two chair?
Yeah, I think it's really a unique calling to be in a number two chair position. For often growing up, I thought I was like a little crazy and like not normal, because so much of what I would see and encounter and experience, I felt so different than everybody else, and how I processed information, how I would want to strategically put things together, the questions I would ask. And I constantly felt like I was in tension with different leaders, or just felt so different. And so in a lot of ways, learning that it's because there is a unique calling to be a second chair leader, to be a person who carries the vision, that isn't necessarily the one creating it and dreaming and getting the emails at 10:30 at night about what's happening 5 years from now. My brain was constantly like, okay, well, how are we doing this? How does this affect everyone? How does that affect the whole team? What are the cultural dynamics? Do we have the budget for this? And how to balance all of those many different areas. And so once I really learned that this is a unique calling, I was like, oh, okay, I'm not crazy. There's something strategically special in this gift and this calling and how we are wired and functioned in that. Do you want me to just jump into all the things, or?
Well, I think that that's a unique thing too, because even over the years, there was some of those questions, you know, am I supposed to be a number one? Like, is it okay to be okay with being a number two, or do I have to be a number one? And so some of that wrestling even in you of coming to that place of like, I am a number two, and how do I become the best number two? Any thoughts on that?
So I even have a list of resources. So this is actually one of the biggest books. I know it's backwards, but it's called Rocket Fuel. I read this at, I think it was about 27 years old. And it talks about, in any healthy organization, it's more of a business leadership book, that in any organization, you have the visionary and you have the integrator. And it processes through all these things, and it gives really strategic like questions, how to fill things out. Here's how your brain functions. Here's all stuff. And it was like, oh my gosh, I'm an integrator. Oh, that makes sense. But also it gave this analogy of, imagine your whole life that you are an Olympian, that you've dedicated everything that you are. You've read books, you've studied, you've done the routine, you wake up early, And everything in you is like, I want silver. And it's like, that's so counterintuitive to today's culture, to especially in the West, what we think of, we should be getting gold and being first. And I constantly felt like I was failing because I didn't want to be the point person. And not that I was afraid of that, but I knew that what it required of me, like, felt like I was being squashed and felt like I was drowning. And it honestly was paralyzing to me in my inability to make decisions. And even those were a lot of our conversations that I can see your head going through. He's like, well, Hillary, what do you think? And I'm like, well, if you want this direction, we would go this way and here's the outcome. But if you want this, we would do this, this, or this. And you're like, but what do you want? And I'm like, well, do we want this or do we want this? And so a lot of that visionary perspective would feel really overwhelming to me because I'm not naturally gifted in that way. I am more of an integrator for sure. So it felt very freeing to be able to have language for the first time and understand how vital my role actually is and that there's nothing wrong in not being the boss, the youth pastor, the senior pastor, but having such value to be the executive pastor, which is my current role, or the assistant director, or whatever my titles have been in the past, that there's such huge value in just being that as much as it is in the visionary.
Yeah, I think those were a lot of our struggles working together was, first of all, you know, I'd have these big dreams, you know, as like an Enneagram 3 visionary leader. You know, I go to lunch, I get inspired, I come back and we're going to change everything. Here's my new thing. And you're instantly, you know, putting together the 55 steps it's going to take to implement that. Right. Mm-hmm. But also there was times where I would give you a project and say, okay, this is your project. You got to run with it. And at first there was a lot of, tension there because I would give it to you and you'd say, well, I don't know how to, like, what do you want? How do you want me to do that? And what we had to learn was for me to be able to communicate as the number one, here's some parameters of what I'm looking for, right? Yeah. Here's a little bit more. I had to give you enough of what I'm looking for that you could then fill in the blanks. Mm-hmm. But if I just gave you too big of kind of a broad stroke, it wasn't enough for you to really feel like you could run because, you know, one of your great gifts, and I think a lot of number twos would probably resonate with this, is they want to make sure that they implement correctly what that number one is trying to communicate. You know, mm-hmm. they want to paint the picture that the number one is envisioning. Right. And so I had to kind of give you enough. And those were some, you could say, fun conversations. Yes. Back and forth of us. I was just like, Hillary, just go, like, just make the decision. And you would come back with, which one do you want? What do you want?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one of the illustrations that I've learned to give is often visionaries will hand you a piece of paper and say, create. And me being I'm not naturally a creative and being an implementer, I my head immediately went, okay, create. Do you want me to paint something? Do you want me to paper mache it? Do you want me to make an airplane? Am I supposed to color it? Am I drawing a picture? Am I taking a photo? Like, create could be my head would go to 7 million different options and it would become paralyzing. And so it was like, I need you to give me those parameters. Hillary, I want you to paint a picture of nature. And it was still very broad. There wasn't any, but it was like, okay, you gave me a framework. Now I know I can run with this. As long as it's a picture of nature, we're cool. We're on the same page. And if I want to do it to be a paper mache, I can then go from there. But because you gave me those parameters, I then felt like I was capable enough to then run with what it is that we were supposed to do.
Which is so funny, right? Because as visionaries, it's the opposite. When we're given the parameters, it's like, you're limiting us. So I know you got a couple tips for those that are in the second chair seat. So why don't you go ahead and just start diving into some of those?
Sure. Okay. For some tips, of course I come prepared and with notes and they're highlighted because that's who I am. I said, the first thing is we have to build a trustworthy relationship with our boss. it is one of the most important things that if the visionary cannot trust us in who we are as a person, in our relationship, in our, are we going to be honest with them if we disagree? Are we going to have vulnerability? If there isn't a trustworthy relationship, it's just falter from there on. And so one of the big things for us as a second chair position is building that relationship. Currently, I have a brand new boss. We've been learning each other for the last 8 months. It's been a learning process. And that's one of the big things we're really getting down to is, okay, we've got to build this trust intentionally. We've got to get to know each other. How do we function? How do we process? So that way he can trust and let go and be able to do what only he can do. And then I can help implement the vision in all the different structures along the church. But all of that,
which is going to be so different, right? Because like with you and I, like I knew you were in junior high. I knew you were an intern when you were in college, right? We had so much history. There was just so much there that that trust was kind of already built in when you actually became on a paid staff role, which had to have been significantly different when you didn't have that whole backstory. You have to be much more intentional about creating that, I would assume.
Yes. And he is an Enneagram 8. So he comes with a lot different of how he sees things, how he contends for stuff, how he processes information. And I've never worked with an Enneagram 8 either. So I know most of your people I know are familiar with Enneagram language. So as a 2, I'm a lot more sensitive. Language is very sensitive to me. I'm very strategic. And so part of that building trust is, which we'll get more down into some of these tips, is asking a lot of those questions and building that relationship. So that way, hey, when I say this, this is what I mean by that. Because oftentimes language can mean something different for other people. It can have different connotations or different ideas of what we think it means. And so even me coming and bringing something to the table, like, hey, I am showing you trust and respect by bringing some pushback on this topic we're talking about. I'm trying to be it respectfully, but it shows that I'm bringing value and I care about this. Whereas to other people, it's like, well, how dare you challenge me? And it's like, if you knew me, you would know I wouldn't challenge if I didn't care, because I would just clam up and shut down. But those are some of the things. If you don't have that trustworthy relationship that you've spent time with, it could be easy to jump to conclusions about each other. Why are you coming so strong on this? But even just learning, like, oh, he's an Enneagram 8. He feels very guttural about his decisions. They're very strong to him. They're very passionate. And I'm like, okay, that's good to know. So how we approach things is a little differently than an Enneagram 3 or a 4 who is very emotional. And so I think that's even some of the things, really learning who they are, who you are, building that relationship, how you think, how you process, and following through on that stuff, because trust is built over time, for sure. Next one.
Keep on going. They're great. Cool.
All right. Next one. Clarity is key. Clarity is so key in our role as a second chair leader. If we don't have clear boundary lines on what our role is, on where our job line is, on what our actual like job description is, like I said, like we will become paralyzed, or we could really start to overstep bounds. Because just because we're a second chair doesn't mean that we necessarily all function the same, that you could be a visionary who in this season of your life is just in a second chair position. So you think very much like the visionary, but you're having to be more of a subordinate leader in this season. And so part of it is really asking those clarifying parameters. Hey, with my job, where do you want me to go? Is this too far? Hey, with these situations, do you want me to just handle those and I'll take care of them? One of my old pastors that I worked with, they were co-pastors, and there was a lot of confusion on what was their role and what was my role and what was my responsibility and what was their responsibility. And because there wasn't that clarity amongst us, even the people underneath us, the youth pastor, the associate pastors, it started to get really confusing, because it would be like, well, I thought Hillary made the decision and she told me this, but now you're coming in and making that decision. Wait, what's happening? And so having clarity is really, really helpful to know where we can run, how far we can run, what decisions we can make, and what ones we need to bring back to leadership so we're all on the same page.
That's good. And I think even clarity on even like work hours and things like that, you know, so for example, I know for me, my brain's kind of always going. And so there often be times where, you know, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, I might send you an email saying, hey, we got to work on this. And just because I send you that email, there was that trust that hey, I understand that I'm thinking about this right now. I don't expect you at 10 o'clock at night to respond to that or to even begin to act on that. I just need to get this out there in, you know, to you so that when it is your time, you know, to work, then go for it, you know? And so I think even those clarifying of, you know, and you're in a part-time role now, right? Yeah. So, you know, so like what days honoring those, hey, and so all of that clarifying, that's huge. That's great. I love it.
Definitely. Which takes us into the next one that I had, which was ask questions. Having questions is so helpful, and it can be cautious because obviously too many questions can bog down, which we'll get to later. But when it comes to going after events, executing things, having questions like, hey, when would you like me to have this done by? I've noticed with a lot of visionaries I've worked with, they'll be like, hey, do this. And you're like, okay, but what's the priority? I have 15 things on my to-do list right now. And you aren't realizing each of these 15 things have 5 sub things that have to get done to accomplish it. So really I have closer to like 30 to-do list appointments and I got an email. So the importance of asking a lot of questions of like, hey, what is the priority on my list? Here's the things I'm executing right now. Does one of these take priority over the other? What due date would you like this by? Just some of those clarifying questions I think can also, one, reinstill trust with your leader and your boss, but also help us have those parameters of knowing which way we want to handle things. Because what I might see as a priority and like, hey, this needs to be taken now, my boss might not. And so that's just automatic. Why didn't you get this done? Well, I've been working on this. Well, what? I told you. Well, you told me any. And yeah. It can get really confusing. So having those moments with that, and part of that was having consistent check-ins with your boss. Hey, here's what's on my list. Here's what's going on. That was stuff I so loved that Ryan and I set in place for years of Monday mornings. We would meet really quickly and it was like, hey, here, what's on your to-do list? What are you tackling? What's coming up on the calendar? What are your priorities? Here's what I want you to add. Hey, I'll do that instead. You take care of that. So it really allowed us to be on the same page. And I then had the clarity I needed to be able to feel like I was released to run and take care of things.
Yeah, those clarifying meetings were super important because, you know, also oftentimes, I can't speak for all number ones and visionary leaders, is oftentimes a simple task like writing an email for me could be a maybe a 1 minute, if I stretched it out, project. But for somebody else, like who's a little bit more detailed, a little bit more systematic, that same email could be a 10, 15 minute project, right? Because they're spell checking, they're making sure that all the information is correct. That
I'm double checking the website to make sure our language is the same, so we're communicating the same across the board.
Where me, I might send it and it's like, oh shoot, that wasn't the right information. Let me send another one. So, you know, and so again, it's the expectation of time, or for example, even like, hey, we need a video for this. And if that number one has never like really spent a lot of time editing video or filming or whatever, they might think that, well, it's only a 1 minute, you know, reel. Why does it take you 12 hours to make it happen? You know? And so clarifying all of that, those expectations is great. I love it.
Very much so. The next one I say is lead with curiosity. Lead with curiosity. You see, our roles are very different between a second chair and a visionary. And the visionary carries a mantle that is so different than what we do. They have to carry the weight of the ministry, the responsibility, the business, all the decisions they're thinking about tomorrow and 5 years from now, the bank account and the person walking through the door. And they're trying to think about all of that, which we feel a lot of it, but it's not the same. And so there are moments where tensions can arise, confusion can happen. Maybe vocal tones can be not necessarily presented the best way that we would have liked. Frustrations develop. And so one of my big things is lead with curiosity and asking one of my favorite questions is, help me understand. Help me understand where you're coming from with this. Help me understand, hey, I noticed our meeting got a little tense. Like, help me understand, is there something that I did that came off as disrespectful? Is there something in that meeting that I could have helped further this along? And asking those questions, I think, one, no matter what, will diffuse any sort of tension, because you're coming from a place of like, let me know what's going on. But even that, like, hey, my job is I want to help you. I want to help you be the best that we all can be. And when we are able to come with that phrase and that understanding, I think it allows us to also present our best selves and like, oh yeah, hey, when you said this, I took that disrespectfully. Because that can be a big thing. And so learning those languages, learning, hey, in that meeting, how did that go? Let's talk about it. Let's process it. Hey, in that, those tensions with those other people, you know what I mean? And so a lot of that is, I would say, lead with curiosity when it comes to your boss, especially in moments of tension, because it's going to happen. But having those moments will, I think, further constantly keep that trust and that vulnerability, because it rises and falls on that. If there's a breakdown in our leadership and our relationship, as a number two and a number one, it's going to be felt throughout the entire area. And there's going to be dysfunction from a cultural side of things, but then also from an implementation side of everything.
Yeah, so good.
The next one I have is, don't be a dream killer. Don't be a dream killer. I remember one of my pastors I worked for, our church was growing. It was pre-pandemic. It was a really exciting time. And we're of a Foursquare denomination, and one of the higher ups came up and was like, hey, so there's this campus coming available. Would you want it? And so he just like pokes his head in my office and he's like, well, what if we took over this campus? And what if we did this? And he just starts vision, like word vomiting, which my head as an implementer immediately went to, how are we going to do this? We're barely at two services right now. How many volunteers is that going to take? You have three babies at home. Like, I was processing all of the things and I started asking, well, what do you think? And how much, when would you want this? And I just started spitballing so many questions. And he immediately went, whoa, 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 Hillary, don't kill my dreams. And I didn't realize that to visionaries, our constant asking of questions can be just that. It can be those squashing of stuff. It can feel like you're sucking the life and the excitement out of things. And as a result, we can come across as very pessimistic because we want to hear the how. How is this going to happen? Where are the finances going to come? How are we going to build that? Because our brain thinks that way. And so a lot of what I've had to learn is, hey, I would ask them a question, be like, okay, are we just in dreaming mode right now? We're just in dreaming mode. I can shut off the how and put that in the back seat and run wild. We want elephants. Okay. I like it. And allow it to be a bit ridiculous almost, because a lot of my thought process is that's ridiculous. That's not realistic. That's not going to actually happen for 5 years. Sometimes we have to allow visionaries to just do that. And if we aren't careful, our questions will kill that dream. And so asking the clarity of, hey, are we in dreaming mode? And if we're in dreaming mode, I can write my questions down and put them in my back pocket if that's what I need to do. But then, hey, we dreamed. And then it's like, okay, is this something, when would you want to see this happen? Oh, not for 5 years? Cool. Like, let's bring it up in 3 years. But I think that's one of the big things for us is, don't be a dream killer. It's very important to know when we should ask questions and when we should just kind of hold them in our pocket and what questions to ask in the right timing.
Yeah. The rocket shift going, don't land it, you know, it's, and so, but the questions are important, but knowing when to bring them out is important. So I think learning what couple questions do you need as a number two, what, you know, how much information do you need to have a voice? Because as a number one, we do care about your voice. We want your voice. So like, do you really need the due date for like the payment for the missions trip that's in 12 months? No, but do you need to know, you know, what we're going to do on the trip and the vision behind, you know? Yes. So maybe ask some of those highlight, not, well, what about the due date that's in 18 months? You know, it's like that, that's a little bit too much at this point. Right. So what information do you need to have a solid voice and begin to table some of those other detailed ones for the follow-up, or even like you said, you know, working with like the working genius process, that there's different times and different styles or meetings that you would want to have. And so making sure that you're in the right meeting at the right time, and those questions will follow along in that process. So that's so good. So what about flipping the tables a little bit? What would you want number ones to know about working with a number two? What would you want to say? If you could sit down a number one, what would you want them to know about working with number two?
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the first things to know is that we are so different than you and how we think and how we process. And so though we might move slower than you would like, though we might ask more questions, no, just always remind yourself that we are a vital part of that. And so I think that's just, I think always holding on to that. One of the big things I say is the importance of speaking your vision clearly. We want to help make your dreams become reality. That is one of the biggest things. If we are a natural type two chair, I joke, my friend is a children's ministry director. I've never been involved in children's ministry, but the way she talks about children's ministry and the mega church she works at, I just go, I want to work for you. Not that I actually want to, but it's, she speaks such clear vision and her heart and her passion for it and why it's so important that what they do, it just ignites something in me that goes, let's go, let's make it happen. How can we add feet and legs to this? And so know the vision that you have is so important, but how you speak it clearly. Let there be some form and shape to it so that we can then help give it the legs to run and stand on. The next one is learn to let go. We want to be here to help you carry it. And the sad truth is you will become the lid to your ministry if you can't learn to find a number two that you can trust enough to let go of things and run with stuff. And know that our heart is that we want to be here for you. We want to help make things happen. And obviously, if you don't feel that, then maybe that might not be the right person in that role. But finding that person that you do trust, that they know your vision, they know your heart, and that you can let go of some of the reins so that way you can do what only you can do and they can help make things happen. So that would be the other one. And my last thing, and this is just as a person who's been a two for years, what I would encourage you is to celebrate publicly and specifically your number twos. You see, number twos often are called the unsung heroes. We are the ones behind the scenes. And if we are doing our jobs well, you won't even know that we exist most of the time. And it's usually when we don't do our jobs well that it's like, well, they dropped the ball or they forgot, you know. But if we're doing our job well, it should be because it's not pointing to us and it's pointing to the ministry. It's pointing to you and your leadership. It's pointing to the organization. And so as a result, we don't do it for the praise, but it can then be very lonely and very isolating because the other higher ups see them. And I say, don't just celebrate. Like, I appreciate and people have done it, like a quick, simple thank you text, but may it cost you something. They're doing their entire life geared towards your vision. They're doing their sacrifices, being away from their family, scheduling their vacation time around your vacation time, that they're making their sacrifices for your ministry. And so if you can celebrate them specifically and publicly, and that it would cost you something, it doesn't have to be financially, but maybe it's in a timely manner, in a public manner, instead of it being on you, shine the light on them when you can and how, let them know how they have been so instrumental in helping you out over the last amount of time or over that project. That's what I would say.
Yeah, I love it. So good. All right. So you talked about earlier the fact that like your vision becomes their vision. And, you know, what about that? Is there more to that? You know, how have you done that? You know, how do you take ownership of a vision and make it your own, right? Without it becoming its own. It's, you know, it's like you have enough of it being your own. You know, let's just say, for example, you know, there's lots of times I'd give you a project, right? And it's like, here's the big vision, but I want you to have a vision within that vision, but your vision can't go outside of my vision.
Yeah.
Right. So how do you do that? What are you doing?
Yeah. I think one of the things is the importance of growing and learning together as leaders. I think the fact that you and I had a very unique relationship, having known me since I was 12 years old. So a lot of how I think in ministry is because it's how you have trained me. And so it allowed such a symbiotic working relationship because of that. But having now had multiple other leaders where we didn't read the same books, we don't have the same language. When I say things like the kingpin or frog kissing, or like, they don't even know what I'm talking about, but we learned together. And so part of it, I think, is one, learning together with your leader. What are their favorite books? You read them so that way you can have a common language and understanding of, just because, like my current boss, he says, it sounds like we're saying a lot of the same thing, and I'm learning, because we're new to this, I'm learning it doesn't mean the same thing because we didn't read the same books. We didn't come from the same ministry training. And so as a result, it's like, oh, okay, I need to ask a little bit more questions to better understand the vision that you are trying to paint, because I'm picturing something in my head that I'm noticing it's not in perfect alignment. So a lot of that is asking those questions. And so for that, like, our responsibility is that we are in alignment, that in staff meetings, in things like this, that we are united and in alignment together. And so with the vision is hearing their vision, asking those questions, learning and growing together. So your common language is common language. And then from there, carrying that out and even having those check-ins. Here's what I'm thinking. Here's what I'm feeling with this. Here's how I'm picturing this. Does that sound good with you? And just having those checkpoints along the way. Like, I remember we wanted our first year interns to have a girl, like I wanted to do like a girls discipleship thing. And you're like, discipleship, go, I don't care. But even from that, I knew enough of like, hey, identity is really important, hearing God's voice. So I was able to bring these big nuggets to you of, hey, here are the big things that I was thinking of. Discipleship. How do they hear God's voice? How do they know who God is? How do they know who they are and how God has created them? Here are the big, and you're like, cool, thumbs up, go. But I was able to bring those things, but you also gave me the clarity of, I want some sort of discipleship strategy for our first year interns. How do we do that? Cool, let me
do that. That's a really good point is, you know, you and I, we did have such a long history before you were on paid staff, right? Mm-hmm. And because of that, we had so much similarity in what you said, the experience, the learning, our history. And so when I said, you know, whatever, iPhone, you knew what an iPhone was, but it's not like I was saying iPhone. And your history was an Android. And so it's like they're both phones, but they're very different, right?
Or and even you say iPhone and you're thinking iPhone 12 and I'm thinking iPhone 4, which didn't have as many capabilities.
Yeah. And so with that, we had so much history that I could say, hey, yes, you run with discipleship and you know that I trust you to run with that. And you checked in with me, right? And I think that's something that's really important as a number two, going back to building that trust.
Yeah.
Is when a number one gives you that freedom is to, within reason, come back for some checkpoints and say, hey, here's where I'm at this point. Am I still in alignment with where you're at, right? Mm-hmm. And then go do your next things and then come back. Now, that's not 50 checkpoints every day. But on, like you said, hey, here's discipleship strategy. You go work it out. Hey, here's some of the big nuggets that I'm thinking. Are we still good? Yes. Let me go back, work it all out some more, come back with, hey, here's some more. Here's where it's at. We're good. Thumbs up. Let's go. And then you run with it, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's part of, I think, building that trust and making sure that your vision is still within the vision of the ministry and of that number one. And so I love that. Hillary, any last thoughts as we kind of wrap it up here?
I just want to give a couple resources. There's not a ton that are given towards us as second cheerleaders. Most of the world is geared for visionaries. So resources are hard. So the first one was that Rocket Fuel. It's by Gino Wickman and Mark Winters. Another great book is Leading from the Second Chair. Great name. By Mike Bonham and Roger Patterson, and then a good podcast. This is not just specifically for second chair leaders, but it has a ton for us. And that is a podcast called Leading Second by Brandon Stewart. So those are some great resources to just fine tune and grow.
Awesome. I love it. Well, thanks for listening to this episode. Can't wait to bring you some more. Hillary, thank you so much. Great insights. And can't wait to be with you guys here soon.
Thanks for having me.